Picture a teenager at a dinner table, asked about their future dreams. Without hesitation, they describe their ideal career, not their ideal life. This seemingly innocent moment reveals something profound. 95% of American teenagers now rank having an enjoyable career as more important than making money or helping others. We've arrived at a strange historical juncture where work has become the sun around which everything else orbits. A Pew Research study found Americans are nearly twice as likely to cite career over spouse when asked what gives life meaning. This isn't just a shift in priorities. It's a fundamental reimagining of what it means to be human. For most of history, wealth meant working less. Today, America's highest earners work more than anyone else, desperately mining their careers for purpose. The term workism captures this phenomenon, the belief that work is not merely necessary for survival, but the centerpiece of identity and the primary source of life's meaning. For most of history, wealth meant working less. Today, America's highest earners work more than anyone else, desperately mining their careers for purpose. The term workism captures this phenomenon, the belief that work is not merely necessary for survival, but the centerpiece of identity and the primary source of life's meaning. The phrase good enough might sound like settling, but it offers something radical: freedom. Psychoanalyst Donald Woods Winnicott discovered that perfect parents who anticipate every need create dependent children, while good enough parents, resilient ones. Our relationship with work suffers from the same perfectionism. Consider Divya's story. She built a successful dairy-free product line called Premier alongside chef Stephen Fisher, until he betrayed her, stripping away her 50% ownership with the cold justification, "It's just business." The devastation revealed how completely she'd merged her identity with her work. During recovery, Divya deliberately cultivated other parts of herself: skateboarding, community building, cooking for pleasure. Research confirms that people with greater self-complexity weather setbacks better because their identity doesn't rest on a single pillar. Now running a new food company, Divya maintains firm boundaries, knowing both her price and herself beyond her work. As religious participation declines, work has filled the void. The nuns, those claiming no religious affiliation, have become America's largest religious group. This shift has deep roots. Martin Luther refrained labor as divine calling. John Calvin suggested hard work indicated salvation status. Max Weber identified how this Protestant ethic complemented capitalism's endless growth demands. Today's prosperity gospel represents the modern evolution, faith and productivity leading directly to material wealth. When I face two job offers, a dream writing position or a prestigious, higher-paying design role, I agonized for weeks, consulting everyone from loved ones to my Uber driver. After choosing the design job, I became insufferable, convinced I'd made a terrible mistake. Only by loosening my grip on work, reconnecting with soccer, reading, cooking with housemates, did I begin seeing my job as good enough. Religious traditions actively separate divinity from productivity through practices like Shabbat. While work provides one legitimate container for meaning, relying solely on it creates dangerous vulnerability. The key is self-determination, actively choosing what to value rather than inheriting the values of surrounding systems. Richard Bowles's What Color Is Your Parachute introduced the radical notion that personal satisfaction should be central to professional success. In 50 years, mentions of dream jobs have grown by 10,000%, replacing security with love and meaning as our highest professional virtues. Fobazi Etar discovered her dream job at 15 in her high school library. After reading a story about a queer teenager that helped her accept her own sexuality, she recognized how librarians had quietly supported her journey. She set her sights on becoming a school librarian. Steve Jobs told Stanford graduates, "You've got to find what you love. Don't settle." But artist Adam J. Kurtz offered a more honest reframe. Do what you love, and you'll work super fucking hard all the time with no separation or any boundaries, and also take everything extremely personally. Becoming a librarian required Fobazi to invest tens of thousands in a master's degree. As a Black woman, she quickly discovered contradictions in the industry's self-image as the last truly democratic institution. At a 2017 library conference, a panelist called librarianship a sacred duty. Fobazi termed this vocational awe, the belief that certain workplaces are inherently good and beyond critique. This mindset allows issues like undercompensation, racism, or sexism to be viewed as isolated incidents rather than systemic problems. During COVID-19, workers deemed heroes were rarely given additional protections or compensation. Fobazi ultimately resigned from her tenure-track position, leaving librarianship entirely. A job remains fundamentally an economic relationship. Treating it as something else undermines workers' ability to demand necessary changes. At 16, Megan Greenwell broke a major trafficking story for her high school newspaper, leading to an 8-year prison sentence for the perpetrator. This early success cemented her identity as a journalist. Columbia's newspaper editor, Washington Post war correspondent in Baghdad at 23, Pulitzer Prize-winning team member, leadership roles at prestigious publications. As Deadspin's first female editor-in-chief, private equity buyers gutted the newsroom. Though she landed at Wired, she found herself a broken shell, unable to disconnect. When offered the permanent editor-in-chief position, she realized her burnout was complete and resigned at 37, despite Anna Wintour's personal plea. The hardest part wasn't quitting journalism, but confronting who she was without it. Psychologists use enmeshment to describe blurred boundaries that prevent independent identity. Ambitious professionals often become enmeshed with careers instead of people. Americans have internalized capitalism's values, measuring self-worth through productivity. Psychologist Jana Koretz finds clients delude themselves into thinking they're only as valuable as their output. She recommends creating time sanctuaries where work is impossible, similar to Shabbat as a cathedral in time, and exploring different identities through non-work activities. 9 months into her sabbatical, Megan had finally found worth beyond journalism. Taylor Moore joined Kickstarter in 2012 as receptionist, becoming the company's social hub through happy hours, movie clubs, and D&D games. Kickstarter was his social universe. Colleagues became friends, bandmates, and romantic partners. Many companies cultivate family-like cultures, from Airbnb's AirFam to Salesforce's Ohana. While workplace friendships boost engagement, they create tensions. As career advisor Allison Green notes, family rhetoric often means unreasonably long hours with an unreasonably high workload for unreasonably low pay. Unlike families, workplace relationships remain conditional. Business needs trump personal loyalties. In August 2018, leadership overruled their trust and safety team's decision to keep satirical comic Always Punch Nazis on the platform after Breitbart's criticism. At an emergency meeting, Justine Lai was forced to resign for sharing leadership's decision on Slack, exposing the power imbalance. Taylor recognized the asymmetry. They can fire us, we can't fire them, and began recruiting for a union. The same bonds that made Kickstarter feel family-like enabled organizing. Despite management opposition and firings, employees voted 46-37 in February 2020 to form the first wall-to-wall union at a U.S. tech company. Organizer Clarissa Redwine reflected, "We turned our friendships and shared experiences into power." In a world measuring worth by output, choosing to work less feels revolutionary. We've been sold a story that jobs should be our passion and identity, but that story is breaking us. The evidence is stark. 41% of Americans feel burned out, workplace stress kills more people annually than malaria, and we're working more hours than ever despite unprecedented wealth. What if the answer isn't finding the perfect job, but changing what we expect from work? A job is fundamentally an economic contract, an exchange of labor for money. This transactional view doesn't diminish meaningful work. It liberates us from expecting careers to fulfill our every need. As Toni Morrison's father said, "You don't live there, you live here, with your people, go to work, get your money, and come on home." The path forward requires both personal and structural change. Individually, we need identities beyond job titles, time sanctuaries where work cannot intrude, and personally defined success metrics. Structurally, we need policies protecting worker time and workplace cultures where leaders model healthy boundaries. Those with the healthiest work relationships share one trait, a strong sense of who they are outside work. A good enough job allows you to be a present parent, engaged friend, contributing community member, a whole human being. Perhaps it's time we changed our small talk from "what do you do?" to "what do you like to do?" A question letting people define themselves on their own terms.